After 25 years in the fashion industry, I've realized that fashion is not really about the clothes, it's about the people. I'm Laura Vinroot Poole, and this is What We Wore. We spoke with Marie Lichtenberg from her workshop in Paris. This meaningful discussion shines light on how the most painful moments and failures could lead to the best opportunities. You'll look at Marie's magical jewelry with a totally different perspective after this powerful conversation. I'm so happy to have you on What We Wore, and I'm embarrassed to say that we've never met in person. And I think we picked up the collection right before the pandemic, sight unseen. I never met you, but the jewelry was so stunningly beautiful. We fell in love with it, and we've loved it since. But nice to see you over Zoom, unfortunately.
Nice to see you too. Very, very. I'm very happy you having me.
You're in Paris.
We are, yeah, I'm in Paris, based in Paris, in Saint-Germain-des-Prés. But I just came back from New York, and it was really good to see New York again since the pandemic.
First time since,
exactly. Yeah. And I live in Paris, and I work in Paris, in the same neighborhood.
And did you grow up in Paris?
I was born and raised in Paris.
Same neighborhood?
Same neighborhoods. Yes, it's so boring. I just saying that it's a bit awkward, but yes, I'm a 100% Parisian Saint-Germain-des-Prés kind of girl. But I've been lucky enough to travel a bit and to see a bit of Paris also. And to see a bit of the rest of the world. So yes, but I'm super Parisian.
What was it like growing up in Paris?
For me, it was great because we have Paris is a wonderful city regarding all the museum, all the education you can get in France. It's crazy. And I've been raised by two very curious people that took me to flea markets, to museums, to cinema, to music concerts. So Paris is like super easy to open your baby's eyes. To me, it's really good. And I think I raised my own children here in Paris. I think it's great. I love this city very much.
I do too, so much. And tell me, Marie, about your parents.
I had two very, very busy parents. They've been like, they both were in advertising, in big, big agency. They were artistic director.
At opposing agencies or the same agency?
Opposing.
Oh, wow.
opposing agencies, but they both worked into my father used to work for high luxury cars and that kind of stuff, more masculine. And my mother used to work for jewelry, caviar. They've been involved in this business for like the last 40 years. My mother is still working. She's 72, but she's still working.
Wow.
And my father retired. I had this very strong image of working parents, very involved in their own work and very passionate about this. And most of all, I saw my mother work her ass off.
Yeah,
she's super strong and very, very talented.
Yeah,
artistic director. And I've been lucky enough to be on her side. Like every, you know, on Wednesday in Paris, you don't have school. So my mother took me every Wednesday to photo shoot. I've been to the office since I think I'm maybe 6 or 7.
Are you an only child, Marie?
We are three. I have a small, he's 22. I have one brother and Theo, and I have one little sister, Alice.
Was it typical for women to work? Did your other friends' mothers work in the same capacity?
Not as much as my mother was I saw non-working moms that I was really jealous about, because it's cool to have a mom at home, but most part of my friends' moms were working.
It's almost like you have to see it in order to understand it, that you have to see as a woman what's possible for your life and having a career and having a family and how to not balance it, but try to balance it. But I think it's hard if you've not seen it.
I think the most important thing is to see how much impossible it is to balance.
Yes.
And to witness it.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Impossible. It's impossible, and it's okay, because at the end of the day, you have children or not, whatever, but you have a career. You're still a woman, even if you have children and if you don't. And I think my mother teach me freedom. I think that's what she did.
By having a career and having and being able to have her own interest and
so much her home, sorry for that, but her home money to be free from any kind of she's free. To me, she's free, even if it's a lot of work, it's tiring or whatever. It's a lot of pressure also to be a working mommy. But I think she's free.
What was their relationship like, your mother and your father?
They divorced very, very fast. but they do love each other very much. They're still French.
They're very French.
So they're very French. But I think he always admired this, even if he couldn't take it too much.
Was your home creative as well? I mean, did she encourage the creativity in you grow you and your siblings growing up and your father?
Yeah, so much. To me, she's kind of an icon, because she built this vision in each. My brother is a film producer, and it's 23. My sister used to be a great, super good painter, and she's still very involved in her and in her heart. And I think she gave us something about this for sure. Me, 100%. It's because and thanks to my mother, I think. She gave me this love, the love of jewelry. She's a collector of antique jewelry, and she never pushed us, but she showed us what was possible.
She had beautiful taste in jewelry. So did you have a love for it as a young person? Do you remember as a child loving her jewelry?
You know, this girl, she was so crazy, because she was working her ass off in the advertising, and because she was so crazy about jewelry, she opened the shop on the weekend, a small shop next to the Champs-Élysées. So on the weekend, we were like working in the shop, like tiny, tiny shop with antique pieces. Like it lasts for, I think, like maybe 3 years. But I have those souvenirs, like she did it.
Yeah.
Even for fun. But yes, she was really into jewelry. She gave me that also. Her mother was like crazy about jewelry, and this is something I kept for in my mind for so many years, but I didn't know that it was so important to me. Yeah.
You wrote that being raised around creative people made you sensitive to the universe at a very young age. How did you feel the sensitivity as a child?
I think I was very into things that kids don't give a shit, actually, that jury. You know what I was doing when I was, well, that was, she was mad after me, but I was taking my mom's jury. I was maybe five, and I was taking out all the stones from the rings and earrings and everything, and I was giving it to my friends at school as little gift. So,
really?
So yes, it was not about stickers or whatever, or maybe I don't know, like Pokemon. I was giving stones. like crazy child. And my mother was calling the mummies at night, seeing her jewelry box like empty and everything, like, and she was, okay, Marie, where I give me the names, give me the names. I have to call the mummies. So she was calling the mummies. I'm sorry, hi, I'm Marie's mother. Yes, maybe mother gave a little stone to Chloe or to whatever, and she was looking for stones everywhere. So that happens. I was very touched and into art, into a lot of movie, a lot of but grown up people movie. Yeah. I was not into like very childish kind of games.
We talk a lot about stones and the vibrations of stones. Do you think you were attracted to the vibrations of stones early, or just the beauty of them? No.
The beauty,
just the color beauty, and the
magic,
the magic.
Yes, the glitter, all that shines, the glittering kind of very girly. And but I was not aware about the prices, and voila, I was not into money so much, but I was into beauty.
Talk to me about how you became a fashion editor rather than an art director like your parents.
Fashion editor is very, very close from artistic director. I think I took this path because advertising was too crowded in a way. Like, I have my two parents and they were good ones. So I didn't want to compete or to be like I didn't care. Someone called me saying like, she needed an assistant, and this happened a bit like this. Very, I was not supposed to work in fashion. I wanted to work in cinema production, and I don't know what happened. I applied to a internship, and it works. And I didn't know I was good at all. But what happened is that, I think 3 or 4 months after, I had like a job of a fashion editor.
Wow.
And it was not supposed to be. And I was the youngest one in the magazine for her.
And why do you think that was?
I think I was doing my thing very, in a very genuine way. I was super candid and super happy to work, and I think it was fresh, and I think it was easy for me.
How old were you?
I think I was 23.
In your work as a fashion editor, were you always attracted more to the jewelry than the clothes, or it was the whole thing?
Yes, I was. Yeah. I was on the beauty part and the clothes, but I was watching on the jewelry office, like always, like trying to see what was happening, what kind of pieces were coming in. And at the end of my career in Elle magazine, I ended with the jewelry.
Talk to me a little bit about what French magazine culture was like at the time. I mean, it was the days of Emmanuel Alt, or?
Yeah. It was those days. Emmanuel was working for the Vogue. And us were working for Elle magazine. And Elle magazine in France, super big, was super big because it's a weekly magazine.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
So weekly magazine, working with the best photographer, we've been traveling a lot. And 10 years ago, maybe 15 years ago, Elle magazine was a trendsetter. It was like super big. At this time, and it was a very feminist magazine also, because Elle magazine in France is not only about fashion. We have it's kind of a feminist social media,
body politics and things
exactly.
Like that. Yeah,
exactly. So it was huge.
Did you have mentors at the time
in fashion?
In anything. I mean, did you have anybody saying, you know, you should do this next, or here's how you do this, or was it all completely just self-led and just being sensitive?
trust me, it was only being sensitive. And because I have like, I'm very bad with limits and people who putting limits or people who are putting limits around, I get angry against them like very easily. So for me, it was difficult. I didn't have any mentors and I didn't want any because to me, when you are so into someone, so in admiration for someone, I think it puts you something that, it limits you.
Yeah. And so how many years were you with French L, and when did you decide that it was time to leave?
13 years.
13 years. Wow.
13 years.
And what was the impetus to leave?
This is a funny story because I was so bored. I'm sorry because I learned so much in this magazine, but so much. I learned so much. What an experience. But at the end, I was bored. And you know, 5 or 6 years ago, all the advertising in magazine took like all the space.
Yeah.
So freedom was not freedom anymore.
Right.
Magazine were not magazine anymore. It was finished. And what happened is like I met someone on the Christmas day. I met my dentist. Believe it or not, I fell immediately in love. And I left my husband. I left everything. I quit my job. I had a baby girl that I took under my arm and I packed my stuff. Yeah. And I left. And so, because I was so in love, I told myself, okay, now you have everything you want. You have one healthy baby. You have someone you love so much. I still love my ex-husband, he's my friend, but it was not possible to stay together.
Yeah.
And I was so happy, but I was very sad about my job. And so I decided to quit everything. I quit everything on the same, maybe in 2 weeks.
Wow.
I quit everything. I had my second baby right away. And that's when and where I this really profound idea of making something with jewelry popped.
Can we go back one little part? Can you talk to me a little bit about having your first baby while you were at French L, and what is it like to be a working mother in France? Is it very supportive?
No.
No.
But that's no. That's, it depends on what you want. I have a very, very, very strange opinion about this because I never stopped working.
Yeah.
I think I went on the set of a photo shoot maybe 2 days before having my girl. So but I think maybe it's not the right way to do. I should have stopped and maybe enjoyed the moment, embraced the moment, but I was too stressed. I was, you know, when you work in magazine, you can lose
position.
Your job in 2 seconds, position in 2 seconds. So it was not, even if I was working in a very feminist magazine, you have to stay.
Yeah.
Super. You have to continue working. You can't stop. So, but I think it was not good. But at that time, I didn't have any choice.
And then when you had your second baby, what was that like? I mean, was it a completely different experience because you weren't working?
No, it was worse. Was even worse because I have difficult pregnancies.
Okay.
Because I do like very, 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 very severe postpartum depressions.
Both times?
For the first one, a bit lighter for the first one because I was working.
Right.
And the second one for Jacques, for my son. Like, I think I almost died.
How did you know that you had it? Because I think that a lot of women don't even know that they're in it.
I think I couldn't even stand on my legs anymore. I think it was that bad. And I'm sorry, it's not an happy
topic,
but I wanted to die. Ugh. And this is something like to give birth and at the same time just want to die. It's really, really crazy.
And so what did you do? How did you ask for help?
I think I'm being lucky enough to have my husband on my side, by my side. He understood like very quickly what was happening, and what happened that, you know what, medication right away, help, like mother, like nanny, like whatever you can get, but some
support.
Help.
Yeah.
And the best support I had and the best gift I had is that my husband came one night and I was like completely, I was really sick. And he came back from his office with a plane ticket for India. And he told me, okay, I set up everything. Your mother is coming. The nanny is coming. I want to keep the babies with me. You are going to India. And you're going to do your job. And you're going to make this storyline possible. And you go now. I don't want to see you anymore like this.
And how old were the babies, Marie?
I think it was 3 weeks.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Okay. And so did you agree? I mean, did you fight him? What did you do?
I didn't. No. Because I saw in his eyes that it was an emergency.
Yeah.
And he told me something like, I don't want you to come back as you are right now. I want my wife to be back.
Yeah.
So whatever you do, take your time. I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
Do whatever you have to do and you come back. So that's what I did.
And did you talk to your mom and your mother went with you?
That's so supportive. Like, go. We don't want to see you. I've been so lucky. She could have packed my own suitcase. Like, go. But I was so sad. I was so depressed. And you know what happened also is that I sent few sketches from the collection when I was pregnant. I sent few sketches to India, but I was sick during the pregnancy, so I couldn't fly.
Right.
I couldn't fly. So things were a bit ready, not completely ready, but the idea was already here.
You had your workroom and everything. You knew where you wanted them to be made and all of that in Jaipur, I guess.
No, I was in Mumbai.
Mumbai, because of the cold. Yeah.
Yeah. I had no clue, but whatever. I haven't. I bet, you know what? That's the story of this honey. Whatever. Do it. Whatever. We'll see. We will manage. We will do whatever we can. And you know, the French.
Yes.
I don't know.
And do you remember the flight? I mean, do you remember flying? Do you remember landing? How did you feel in that process?
Till now, I could remembering this. I could cry again.
Yeah, I could cry. I mean, it's
because it's honestly, it's the turning point of my life.
And did you know that at the time, Marie? Could you feel that this was the turning point? That this is gonna be the new direction and the happiness and.
I think that when I hold the first piece in my hands, you know, it's like this, it stays. You don't know why something is working, not working. Like, I felt something very particular. And I don't know, maybe because I was waiting for this, like, since such a long time. Because, I'm sorry, but 10 years ago, I designed a collection. And as you know, doing jewelry is super, super expensive. And I was super posh at this time. And I was like, designing like super expensive pieces that I couldn't do. So I never did it. But so it was, to me, doing jewelry was an ultimate, it was not even a goal, it was a dream. And sometimes you don't want to reach your dream, you know, you just want to be dreamy and whatever. So I was super scared. I was so scared. I remember being in the plane like so fucking scared because I knew, you know, sometimes I don't know how to say this in French and in English, but in French, you say that when you are close to your goals, to your inner self, there's kind of a, you are frightened. And more you're close, more you have resistance to go because you don't want to be happy. You don't want to, it's too much.
It's frightening to get what you
It's
want,
to,
because it may not be what you really want.
exactly. And I was like dying inside. But now I think I'm looking for the sensation. I want to be scared because I think that when I'm feeling scared means that I'm on the good path.
And how long were you in India, Marie?
I think 2 weeks.
Okay. And when you came back, did you feel a difference?
But what happened is that I came back with 40 pieces and I don't know what happened. I posted it on Instagram and I sold the 40 pieces in 48 hours. So I felt
You're like, okay.
very much better. Like,
Everybody felt better. What were the first pieces?
everybody like, oh, thank God. Oh, good. It's okay. It's gonna be okay. It's gonna be okay. Okay. Yes.
Were the first pieces love locks?
Love you to the moon and back locket and the Bonheur locket. Those were the two first pieces.
And will you tell me a little bit about the love locks and sort of where they came from and what they mean for you?
Of course. I when I was 14, I got a very beautiful chain from my mother. She's my mother, she's French, she's from French Island, from Martinique.
Oh,
And
yeah.
in Martinique, you have regional kind of jewelry named the Forçat. The Forçat is a big hollow gold chain closed with a very specific clasp. And this clasp is from, I think, end of 17th century. It's French. And I got this piece from my mother when I was 14. She got this piece from her mother, grandmother, blah, 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 heirloom. Like you can do more heirloom than this. And I got this. And when I had my first baby, Paloma, I wanted to do a special piece for her because I was so spoiled by my mother. I had so much jewelry, so much cool stuff. I wanted to give something a bit special to Paloma. And so I decided to, I still remember I was in my living room on my coffee table and I sketched this little clasp and I just wanted to give a little message, a sweet message to my daughter. So I sketched the Love You to the Moon and Back on the six faces of the clasp. And it came out like this. It was really in love with Victorian antique jewelry and sentimental jewelry with those all those little pieces with words and everything. It came out like this. And that was the two first pieces.
Will you also explain a little bit about the materials that go into the lockets and sort of how they're made?
Alors, at the beginning, it was 10 karat gold with garnet, like on a holy string named the Moli that I got in Jaipur. Those were the first version. And then, because I still super posh, I upgraded the designs. And now we are working on 14 and 18 carats. We're doing handmade jewelry in Italy and in India. Everything is hand enameled. really beautiful stones, really beautiful guilloche. We are working on very particular threads. Those are all handmade and beaded. We are trying to find the best chains from Italy, from Dutchland, from France, all over the world, trying to put together all the best handcrafts you can find and to put it on very small pieces that we're doing. So trying to work on the techniques, we are using ivory techniques for most of our pieces.
Yeah.
And I think the most important thing we are using is sense of humor, I think. and we are very laid back. We are not from Place Vendôme, and we are not from this. No, but that's true. And it's, you know, in Paris or in France, launching a jewelry brand is really particular.
Yeah.
Because it's a small world.
Yeah.
So a touch of irreverence, a touch of sense of humor is very important. But working on with the best atelier in the world, that's what I like.
I know you had a love for jewelry early on, but have you learned along the way? And did any of this knowledge come from being the fashion editor? It was all completely self-taught from zero. Yeah,
I was zero, and I'm still learning 1,022 things on a day.
Like, yeah,
I'm learning every day, and I'm very, very happy because I'm surrounded by very talented people that knew about jewelry.
But isn't that the most exciting thing, to be able to learn every day? It's so rare.
That's what I needed.
Yeah, that's what you needed.
To be fed by something that I don't know. And I'm learning, and it's so, 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 so technical and so particular. And so it's a crazy world. And I'm very proud because those guys are super talented, and they know what they are talking about. Because
yeah,
me, at the very beginning, I just wanted to design something fun,
yeah,
and cool and meaningful.
Yeah.
And it's turning into something really serious, but in the best way.
I wanted to share with the listeners some of the things that you wrote that I thought were so beautiful and so eloquently written, and wanted to see if you'd expand on them. One of the things was, being lonely taught me how important it is to be independent, and even more as a woman.
True. No, because I think your question was so smart, because you were talking about failure.
Yeah.
Failure to me is the base of the most beautiful things in the world. It's to me, it's the, and you ask me to choose between my favorite failures. All my failures are my favorite ones.
I love that. You also said, being frustrated at work taught me how important it is for me to be able to make final decisions and to become an entrepreneur.
Yeah. Yeah, at the end of the day is the, I think it's a very specific profile. Everybody, it's not for everybody, but me, I told you, like, those boundaries and to be stuck in something and to be having to wait for somebody to choose for me, it's impossible.
Yeah.
It's impossible, but on the other side, it's a lot of responsibility to have the final cut.
Yeah.
But I prefer having the final cut than waiting for somebody to give me a go or whatever, or a
yeah,
no.
Yeah, exactly. The final one that I loved was, you said, being an imperfect mother teaches me every day that to find myself will help me to guide my children in a very organic way. I mean, everybody feels that way. My daughter just turned 18 yesterday, and I felt
God,
more imperfect yesterday than I've felt in the whole 18 years. You know, you just don't feel, it's a really difficult job that you never really pass.
It's an impossible job. And it's an impossible job, but being good and passionate and being good in what you do, I think it's a way of teaching something to a very important thing. I'm very bad in doing puzzles. I'm very bad in like, I'm so bad at it. I don't have any passions, but I love them to death. I love them so much. But you know what? What happened? When I came back from couture, we won a prize for emerging designer. And when I came back with the trophy, I saw in my daughter's eyes is something that I couldn't have teach her in any other way. Like, fuck it, she made it. She went, she worked doing what she loved, and she got a prize. It's possible. What the fuck? And my son told me something so cute. Oh, you had a prize, but did you get candies too? And they're like, so it's a, to me, it's a very important. I'm not good for so many things, but on this, I know I have something special.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna work on this. I'm trying to work on my bad sides also, but this is bringing a bit of happiness, and this is bringing something positive to my family life. So why not?
I would agree. I mean, you have said, and I would completely agree that our most successful moments came from failure. And as a parent, you know, you want to make everything wonderful for them. You want to give them opportunity. And it's really hard to remember that probably their biggest successes will come from failure. You know, it's hard to watch that and hard to allow that, I guess.
Of course, yeah. Failure, yeah. And frustration.
Yeah.
I think frustration is really important too. And to life is not perfect and at all. And it's more and more difficult. And then they have to me, they have to learn how independence is important. And yeah. Independence is work. It's work. Yeah. There's no, or maybe, or drug and alcohol, but I don't think so. I think to be free, you have to work, and you
I
have
agree.
To find your way. And to, it was, I maybe it's my solution, because I got so much from this work, and it saved my life, like literally.
Yeah.
Maybe for other people, it's gonna be another thing, but that's my thing.
It's also what you saw in your mother as well, which is really important.
Of course, of course.
And what your children are seeing from you. What's your favorite piece of advice that you've been given?
I don't know, but it's still advertising, but the just do it from Nike to me, it's the best. It's the
I best. Love it.
Yeah. Just do it. Just do it. Just do it, whatever.
What,
do
I mean, yeah, what's the worst that can happen? Just do it.
I mean, just fucking do it, because waiting is not a good idea, and to do even a little thing leads to so much bigger.
Yeah,
it's amazing how just doing things, even small things, even can lead to a whole world, a new world. So yes, do. Because if you just sit and think, you're going to go crazy.
Well, and I was going to say, I think that also could be said for depression, because I have experienced depression in my life. And I think that really it is like actually just doing it, just taking a first step, just while going on a walk around the block, even. Just,
that's what you did.
Yeah,
that's,
just little things that starts you getting better, I think. I mean, you know, 100 other things, but it does really take just that one step to just start.
And it's working. What's super cool about just doing it is that it's working for everything. Everything.
Do you have a piece of advice for a listener who might want to start a collection or who's interested in jewelry? Just do it.
I think, first, just do it. C'est sûr. Just do it. And also, you know, when I started, people were saying like, oh, fuck, jewelry again, but everybody's doing jewelry or whatever. There's a room for everybody.
Marie, I have to say, though, about your jewelry, and I have been in this business a long time, but also I'm 50 years old and I've loved jewelry for my whole life.
You don't look like 50 years old at all.
But thank you. But your jewelry is something I have never seen before. Like, you have done something that I have never seen, something so original and of its own world. You know, I mean, that's really hard to do.
But you know why? Because I didn't have any. You were talking about icons.
Yeah.
I don't have any icons.
Yeah.
And I did this. I think at some point, if you're listening too much to people or looking at people's stuff all the time, comparing yourself, you're going to be stuck.
Yeah.
And what I did is to mix everything that I loved. And it's like the piece of advice I have is, don't do any fucking business plan. Don't. And that it's true. Do first, and then you will see about money.
Yeah.
Do your dream piece. Do whatever makes you happy. You will talk about money after.
Yeah.
Create first, and then you will manage.
Yes.
If the idea is beautiful, you will find money. You will find you will find a room for you. You will find retailers. You will find. You just need a good idea.
Okay, on this podcast, our last question is always, what did you wear to the prom? And I know there aren't French proms, but did you have like a special graduation party, or is there some special dress? What's your favorite thing you've worn? Or something embarrassing you've worn?
So much more embarrassing things than beautiful things. But I would go on my wedding day. We did something very cool because we took a flight and we went to Tel Aviv, just the two of us.
Yeah.
I got married in a synagogue in flip-flops. And I think that's what my was my ultimate fashion moment.
And what was your dress? Was it white?
This is really funny. I had a vintage Alaïa dress. And I forgot my veil. My
veil.
It's veil. Mm-hmm. My veil in no, the veil is not the same. Veil. a big veil on my no. And so I forgot it in Paris. So fuck. I had to go to the shuk, the market. So I bought a vintage kind of giant napkin that I put on my head.
Was it beautiful though?
Really nice. But seeing the picture now, I can tell it's a napkin, but you know, nobody really noticed. But I think that was a good one. The napkin, the flip-flops, and the vintage Alaïa dress was a good
one. I like it. Any jewelry?
Of course. I had but nothing from me. I was wearing a very beautiful piece from Bulgaria, from the 70s. It's a huge gold dollar coin.
Beautiful.
Made in the 70s by Bulgaria.
Beautiful.
So that was the piece, yes. And a very nice wedding ring that I don't have today.
I love it. Marie, thank you so, so much. I loved talking to you. And thank you for being so generous and sharing so much.
Super. Thank you so much.
What We Wore is produced by Capital and Balto Creative Media. The original song, Someone So Enchanting, was composed and performed by Britt Drozda. QueenCityPodcastNetwork.com.